Question of the day, and it's a weird one. Have you created, unbeknownst to yourself, an avatar of yourself? Think about that. I want you to think about that. Plus, we'll be covering why there are so many teenage girls posting TikToks of themselves crying or in a hospital to generate likes. All of that and more today on Candace Owens. Okay, before we continue, I want to take a quick pause to talk to you about the app Halo. You all know that my faith is super important to me. My relationship with God is how I find my strength and peace in this crazy world. And with all of the insane anti-religious ideologies that are being pushed by the left on a daily basis, it can be hard to tune out the noise and remember what we know is good and true, which is why I love Halo. Halo is the number one Christian prayer app in the United States and the number one Catholic app in the world. It's rooted in the Catholic tradition, but an amazing resource for any Christian looking to dive deeper into their prayer life. This is perfect for my family because, as most of you know, I am in a mixed faith household. My husband is a devout Catholic, and I am Protestant. Halo has prayers and meditations to guide you throughout your entire day, morning to night. Some of the most popular prayers include the Daily Rosary, Gospel Reading, and Daily Psalm with Bishop Barron. Plus, there are minute meditations, meditations for sleep, and kids' prayers and meditations. Halo helps me sleep better, lower my anxiety levels, and find peace and calm throughout the day, and I think it will do the same for you. So try it for 3 months free at halo.com/Candace. That's halo.com/Candace. Reclaim your peace and download Halo today. Okay, so I asked you the question, have you accidentally created an avatar of yourself? Now you might be thinking, Candace, what are you talking about? Did I create an avatar of myself? What I mean more specifically is there a you that you have created that lives in the online universe that has nothing to do with you in your real life? Like, are you an entirely different person in your real life? You've somehow separated your online activities, and who you are online means nothing in terms of the things that you are doing in person. As just one example, we spoke about this because I think about this all the time. When I examine the way that women act and their behavior online, I go, why are they doing this? Would they do this if we were actually face to face? As one example, a couple of episodes ago on this podcast, we discussed Emily Ratajkowski, and I was remarking how odd it was that she is speaking about her husband, who she is now divorcing, and how he cheated on her. And in the media, it said sources say that he's an absolute dog. Those sources might be Emily herself, who knows. But the idea that her husband is a dog because he cheated on her in, I guess, the real world, but Emily posts naked photos of herself on Instagram all the time for men and women that she doesn't know to look like. I posed the question, like, would she do that in the real world? Would Emma Ratajkowski go into a room full of guys and take her top off? And if she did that, would she consider that cheating? I think her answer would be yes. I don't know. I hope it would be yes. But somehow, if she does it on Instagram, she's like, this is fine. This is just what I do. If she's created, that means an avatar of herself. So her husband has sinned because he didn't do it online. He did it in real life. But she doesn't sin by extensively putting naked photos and nudity online for everyone to take a look at. So this discussion and why it is also on my mind is because it came up again on a backstage porn discussion. Backstage, obviously, Daily Wire. We do it live once a month where all of the hosts sit around and we talk about various topics. And then behind the paywall even further on Daily Wire Plus, the conversation continues. Well, let me tell you, I think the most interesting discussion that has ever been had on Daily Wire Backstage took place on Daily Wire Plus. You should go pursue it and you should go find it. It was us discussing porn. Yeah, so picture me, Candace, by myself as the only woman in a room full of guys, chiefing cigars, talking about pornography. And the reason this topic came up is because we obviously take audience questions from our live viewers. And somebody wrote in and asked about her husband. She said, I'm paraphrasing here, but she said, I'm in a relationship. My husband is addicted to porn. Do you have some resources that you guys might recommend? And so we went around, and at first we just kind of tried to answer the question. I spoke about the Bible as a resource. Michael spoke about the Catholic faith. But then the conversation evolved or devolved, whichever way you want to look about it, if you want to think about it, in to expanding on whether or not watching porn was an act of infidelity. And Ben Shapiro took the stance that there were different scales of sin, right? So watching perhaps pornography online on your laptop is, of course, not the same as engaging in having a sexual affair in the real world, right? And I didn't necessarily agree with that, and neither did Matt Walsh. And Matt Walsh offered this. Take a listen.
We talked about how there's really no difference between doing something on the internet and doing it in real life. Well, if you found out that your husband went to a motel room and was the third party in some sort of sexual dalliance, but he didn't do anything. He kind of sat there in the hotel room watching it. Then I think we would all agree in this room that that is cheating. That is serious. That's like, that could destroy your marriage.
Yeah, and I would still say you shouldn't emasculate your husband.
But why
well,
should emasculate?
It depends what you mean by emasculate.
Yeah, what do you mean by that? Like, to have the discussion about, I mean.
I didn't say not have a discussion.
No. I actually have the discussion that me and my husband has because I'm reading a lot of books about Catholicism because I want to understand his commitment to Catholicism, right? So we didn't have a discussion because he was watching porn or anything like that. What I'm saying is that she said that her husband has an addiction, and are you saying that it's emasculating to even have, like, what are you viewing as emasculating, I guess, is my question.
Yeah, I'm saying don't emasculate your husband. I'm saying a lot of the ways that one can react to that problem are emasculating. And I'm saying that—
To humiliate him and say you're a pervert.
Well, but the pornography, he emasculates himself. The pornography, right. You emasculate yourself
with the pornography. And I'm clear on both sides of this. I accuse women of doing an act of infidelity when you're on the internet, putting your boobs and giving them pornography on Instagram. Yeah. That's why I brought up Emily Ratajkowski and what she's been doing to her husband.
A lot of women are addicted to wearing yoga pants, and I don't think that one should humiliate their wife.
Okay, so what do you think about that? So me and Matt Walsh are taking the stance, and he asks a very important question, I think. If you are saying that it's totally fine for a woman or a man to lock themselves into a room and watch pornography, and it's not an act of infidelity, would you also then agree that if a wife or a husband went into a hotel room and watched two other people having sex, that would also not register as an act of infidelity? You probably, the latter, would say, no, that's different because it's in the real world. Okay, so then how do you differentiate? You're watching two people on screen that it's not your spouse, right, that are having sex. For some reason, we have all accepted that the online world, you can just sort of create a different avatar of yourself. Well, I you know, I'm not actually in the hotel room with them as they're doing this. I'm watching it via a screen. But think about where that lands us. Think about the world that we're in. Think about what technology has allowed for. Decades ago, of course, this didn't exist, and you wouldn't ever, ever, ever think that it would be acceptable for an individual to be watching other people partake in sexual activities. Now, things are getting very extreme. As just one example, virtual reality glasses, right? You know what I'm talking about, these VR glasses that people are wearing. I put them on one time, and it terrified me. It was so real, it terrified me, right? I was unwilling to, as I had these glasses on my face, to begin the video game. All I had to do was to jump, right? So my physical body in the real world just had to jump. But the virtual glasses were spelling to me that this was so real that if I jumped, I would be falling down a building, falling down 50 stories onto the ground, and I refused to jump. That is how real the VR glasses make things, right? People are now watching pornography that way. Would you consider that to be an act of infidelity? Would you consider, forget if it's just on your computer screen, but what if you're now able to put yourself in such a realistic scenario that you're surrounded by naked women or naked men, and you are then able to watch pornography that way? Does that seem like an act of infidelity? These are very important questions. You might say yes, you might say no. I would say yes. I would say yes. And I think as that conversation goes on, it is good to have an expectation that your spouse will not partake in those things. I think that's fair. But we keep lowering the bar on expectations because we are creating some weird mental separation between our online behavior and our real life behavior. Someone also offered to me, and I don't have an answer to this, it's just more food for thought. I'm just giving you food for thought. What about video games? They asked me. Well, what would you say about video games? What if you go online and you're shooting a bunch of people online? Obviously, that is not the real world. Is it any different? Now, I don't mean to stoke the flames of the debate about whether video games are causing mass shootings. I do not believe that at all. But it begs the question, is that a good thing to engage in for your mentality and for your psyche? I'm asking you that question. I can't answer that because the last thing I played was Mario Kart. And I like to think that I am a person that virtual Candace is exactly the same as non-virtual Candace. I have not created an avatar of myself. I would never think that it would be acceptable for me to go online and to pose nude. And then in the real world, be like, oh, I don't know why guys are lusting after me. I have no idea. That's online Candace. That's avatar Candace. Anything I put online, you would see in my real life. Meaning I post, if I post a picture of me and my husband sitting at a restaurant, you could find me and my husband sitting at a restaurant. I'm not creating a different character of myself. Just an interesting update regarding Emma Ratajkowski. She came out in defense of the woman, if you're following the story, of Adam Levine having cheated on his Victoria's Secret model wife, Bahati Prinsloo. A lot of people, including myself, talked about that woman who he was texting because she wanted to absolve herself from his Instagram DMs and said she felt manipulated. And yes, she had engaged in this one-year dalliance with Adam Levine, but she was just a young girl. And we all rightfully said that excuse no longer cuts it. You knew he was a married man. That doesn't excuse him. Well, it doesn't excuse him, of course. He partook in this and he is the one that took the vows to Bahati Prinsloo. But we need to stop excusing the women. Of course, Emily Ratajkowski, whose husband has recently cheated on her, and she does not at all think she has played a role in this. She does not see her acts on Instagram to be an act of infidelity, had something to say about that take. And of course, she is going to defend the woman involved in this affair in this. Take a listen.
I think a huge problem in our culture right now is that we just say, oh, men are monsters. They're terrible. They're horrible. We don't hold them accountable. And then we blame other women and we ask women to adjust their behavior instead of just saying men need to change their behavior. It's sexism. It's classic misogyny. Period.
It's actually none of those things, Emily, but I don't expect you to know what any of those words mean. Actually, it's not classic misogyny to expect that women act respectable towards other women that are in married relationships. It's not classic sexism to say that it takes two to tango. That's actually equality, if you want to get down to it, to look at the party that is involved, both parties, the man and the woman, and say both of you hold responsibility here. That's equality. I know that women are getting so used to special benefits in the post-Me Too and Time's Up world that equality feels like discrimination, but it isn't. We're not discriminating against this woman. She knew what she was doing. She knew who Adam Levine was, right? She knew exactly what she was doing when she answered his direct messages. She knew he was a married man, just like he knew he was a married man. They are both wrong. And the sweet irony of her, we need to just blame the men. It's no. If you actually had an equitable brain, Emma Ratajkowski, you would see how your own behavior in your marriage was an act of infidelity. As I said in a previous episode, I feel like I have slept with Emma Ratajkowski. Every time I open an article about her, her boobs are in my face. Every time you open an Instagram and they suggest posts to you, her boobs are in your face. And you know, don't even know why, by the way. The most bizarre headline of this week was actually, I think it was in the Daily Mail, they were reporting, and it said, Emily Ratajkowski promotes bikini topless. What? I don't even understand that. What do you mean she's selling a bikini topless? How are you, don't you physically have to wear the garment? Somehow she's just like, I'm taking, my boobs are out again, so buy the bikini that's not on me. I mean, this is weird. And as I said, represents a tremendous act of infidelity to her marriage. And so she got what she gave, and she was given exactly what her behavior is, someone who is not in a committed relationship. Another person who I loved to consider when talking about this topic of these strange avatars that we have created is Madonna, who has become so strange. It's almost like we are watching somebody facing a real mental crisis, which is what Instagram really has become. Various women acting out their mental crises. Here are some photos of her. She's wearing fishnet tights. She posted this to her personal Instagram. She has her boob out. She is in leather, and she is biting what looks to be a leather, the end of her metal bed. And she's wearing, just to be extra controversial, she's wearing a cross around her neck. And yeah, fishnets and heels, half naked, actually more than half naked. And this is meant to be seductive. And she has her buttocks out through the fishnets and she's bending over on top of a pillow. And I look at this and I say, would you do this? She's under the bed in this one photo. She's under the bed with her butt in the air in fishnets. She's 63 years old, I believe. I look at these photos and I ask myself, would you do this in real life, Madonna? I mean, just imagine if you're a person and you're going to buy a mattress, right? You're just going through a store. You're like, I need a better mattress. And you see a 63-year-old woman, right? And she's in fishnets and she's on top of the bed. And she's moving her hips and she's gyrating into sexy poses, getting on top of this mattress. Then she gets under it and she's fully, she's almost naked, right? And she puts her butt into the air and you can see her thong through it. And then you see that she's wearing a leather corset with her boobs pushed out. You would say, this is completely crazy. Somebody please call a police officer to assist this woman. She's obviously having a breakdown. You would expect and not be surprised if she got taken away in an ambulance and put on a Psych 5150 hold because clearly she's having some sort of a breakdown, right? Yeah, in the real world, but not in the strange avatar world that we've created where 63-year-old women doing this is normal, is okay, is in some cases, according to the comments, brave, slay bae. Oh, we love you. It's provocative. Yeah, it is provocative. It's provoking me to think that you have a mental disorder and it needs to be addressed. And that's all I have to say about that. Okay, guys, before we get into some of these crazy headlines today, I want to talk to you about Front Page Magazine. Front Page Magazine was founded by conservative writer David Horowitz and has spent over two decades combating the radical left's efforts to destroy America. There are two new podcasts, The Right Tape with Mark Tapson and The Jason Hill Show, offer riveting interviews and insightful coverage of politics, culture, and current events. It takes a village to combat the radical left's effort to destroy America. That's why, as a fan of my show, you should also check out these guys over at Front Page Magazine by visiting frontpagemag.com. And while you're there, you can support their cause by making a tax-deductible donation. Inside every progressive is a totalitarian screaming to get out, and no one understands that better than the team at Front Page Magazine. Go check out frontpagemag.com today. Okay, now it's time for some topics du jour. All right, so if you're like me and you're extra conscious when you are on social media, you're starting to realize that people are presenting with mental disorders. That's the only way to describe it. In fact, I have noticed some influencers that have huge followings doing this new thing where they cry for attention. They cry. They quite literally have something going on in their life, and they will post these videos of them crying, and they say things like usually what they have in the caption is, this is the real me, raw, and they're crying hysterically, and maybe sometimes there's some music to it. And I remember there was one person I used to follow that did this, and I just thought in my head, this person is deranged, obviously, because that is not normal behavior if you consider the steps to get to the point where you're crying online, right? So what happens is you have a feeling, you're sad, 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 and rather than doing something normal, like, I don't know, just crying by yourself or reaching out to a friend or calling a family member, people that you know and that are there to comfort you, you grab your phone, you quickly grab your phone and you get onto a social media and you press play. So I don't know if you're holding back the tears or you're starting the tears, but think about that process of your first instinct when you have a real emotion is to do something as inauthentic as grabbing your phone, opening a social media app and pressing play. That, I mean, it's just what? Clearly, this is a weird thing. But as I said earlier, people are creating avatars of themselves, and it's all about just getting those likes. So it is no surprise that there is an article entitled Addicted to Being Sad, Teenage Girls with Invisible Illnesses, known as Spoonies, post TikToks of themselves crying or in the hospital to generate thousands of likes, as experts raise concerns over internet-induced waves of mass anxiety. I think we're just going to jump right into me showing you and having you listen to some of these TikToks. I will read what is on the screen and describe what I am seeing. So this is a girl who is sitting on a toilet and she is crying and she is holding a medical device. She has some sort of an autoimmune disorder, not relevant to me describing this to you, but she's going to inject herself with her medicine on this toilet as she cries to music. This is what she's doing on TikTok. I can't even offer any commentary on that. here is another video of a second person who is going to get some likes. She is laying down on a mattress, fully her face facing the camera, of course. And it says, "This is America. So I get to be in severe pain every day. I was released from the hospital. And they wouldn't bump up the surgery because it's not considered an emergency. So this is my only option, the option being to take Tylenol." And she's crying on the bed, allegedly in pain. Here's a third video in which she writes, as she, again, dancing to music, is holding her belly. It says, "Point of view, tell me you have chronic pain without telling me you have chronic pain." She's gyrating, she's crying, she's facing the side, and she's grabbing her back, and she's grabbing her stomach, and she is crying. I do not doubt that she has chronic pain. I think that social media is causing people to have chronic emptiness, which to me represents a sort of crying pain. I am shocked at the anti-socialness of social media, right? To what it takes, the time that it takes and sucks away from your real life to set up a camera, to set up a tripod, and to rock back and forth, to come up with language to put on the screen, to get people to feel bad for you, to take the time to drum up enough emotion to create tears. All of that action taking place, it's gotta take at minimally, the videos that we just saw, you know, an hour maybe, right, for them to get that going, for them to post it, all so that after you post it, you sit there and you psychotically wait for the likes and the comments and for someone to give you faux applause and say you're so brave. That's a mental disorder that is happening. These young women are not healthy. They don't know how to go out and to get that attention from elsewhere. So these are empty vessels. And it is, again, a deep irony that we are calling this social media when, in fact, it is creating anti-social behavior. That is what I am always seeing. It goes back to a couple of days ago when we covered Chrissy Teigen and this never-ending miscarriage turned into an abortion story, that she was in the hospital and she every second that she was in the hospital was telling people, "We're doing great, we're in the hospital, blah, blah, blah." I mean, she just wanted everyone to be in that hospital room with her. Strangers, by the way. This is what makes it even more bizarre, is that we're doing this to appeal to people that simply do not know you, right? They can't do more but hit the like button. Maybe that gives you a temporary high and a kick of serotonin, a dopamine shot to your brain, or post a comment like, "Oh, I'm so sorry you're going through this. Oh, praying for you. Oh, I'm hoping that you're doing okay, thinking about you." That is why they are doing this. This very extreme behavior, all for what ultimately will result in a like, potentially some more follows, and some positive commentary of people feeling bad for them. Totally bizarre. Incredibly, the New York Post covered this phenomenon, and I am encouraging you guys to find this article and to read it in its entirety, because I am going to grace through it, but it is worthy of sitting down and reading the entire thing. It was written by Dr. Nicholas Cardaris, and the article is entitled "How Social Media is Literally Making Teens Mentally Ill." In it, they first unpack a patient's treatment. They gave this patient the name Susie, obviously not her real name, but it was someone that he saw who was showing symptoms of borderline personality disorder. And he figured out that she was spending up to 12 to 15 hours a day on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube after she became depressed because a bunch of her friends went off to university. So yeah, you could be a sadness, everyone's in college, you're not, you're back at home, I get it. But now this girl starts spending 15 hours a day across various social media platforms. This led her to following a bunch of borderline personality disorder influencers, because why wouldn't there be a community of borderline personality disorder influencers, right? There's an influencer for everything. And she started joining online BPD groups. That obviously stands for borderline personality disorder. And slowly, she began to emulate their behavior. So she didn't have borderline personality disorder, but she starts emulating their behavior because obviously she's trying to identify with this tribe. And so what that led to was she began cutting herself because she watched these videos of influencers that said that cutting themselves helped them feel like they were in control. By the way, quick pause. Isn't it amazing what doesn't get banned on social media, but what does get banned? I'm amazed. Like if you say, I don't think the vaccine worked. Goodness, take it offline. It's a danger. But these BPD girls talking about their cutting and influencing people to cut themselves and saying that cutting just helps them feel in control for likes, this can stay on the internet, I guess, because it maybe is a good thing for big pharma. More patients, I suppose. So back to Susie's story. So she starts cutting herself, but admits to the doctor that is seeing her that she doesn't actually like to cut herself. It doesn't actually offer her any sort of a release, as these girls are talking about online. She's just doing it with the hope that eventually it will give her relief. And the reason why she liked that angle is because she felt that them talking about their cutting made them extra interesting and authentic. What? Does that sound crazy? Because it is crazy. But that is what people are seeing. They're like, the more extreme that you are in your behavior, the idea is that you're trying to perceive people, you're trying to get people to perceive that you are more authentic and more real. So we go back to that example of women crying on the internet, right? I'm so real and I'm so raw, right? And these girls are following me and eating it up and they're going, I'm going to emulate that. And I'm going to now put every feeling I have and every feeling that I have on the internet so that people, I don't know, feel closer to me, or maybe perhaps that I feel closer to them, but you never actually do feel closer to them, right? It just leads to depression. So this doctor helped Susie out in the most amazing way. Do you want to know what he prescribed her? Borderline personality disorder. He prescribed her no internet. Wow, what an idea. Once all of her devices and social media were removed, something quite amazing happened. Within 2 weeks, she was calmer and less reactive. She made friends in the program that she was in, and she no longer cut her arms, and all thoughts of suicide evaporated. He turned off her phone, so to speak. Stop being online and stop being a crazy person. Stop following these influencers that are influencing you to be irrational and unstable. You are just becoming an emotional bubble because you're watching all these people that are competing to do more and more extreme things for a couple of likes. But the doctor says what's interesting is that if she actually had BPD, she shouldn't have been cured that quickly, right? Because she didn't really have it. What she had was something closer to a social contagion. I'm going to read you directly from this article. This is a quote. We are living in the age of digital social contagions. It's a time where certain illnesses aren't spread by biological transmission, but by a digital infection that attacks the psychological immune system. Using algorithms that find and exploit our psychological vulnerabilities, we get sicker as big tech gets stronger. A psychological immune system. I love even that phrase because that is what it is. It is a social contagion and it is breaking people down psychologically. And you have to develop a psychological immune system. I think that is something we don't talk about enough. Making sure that you are fortified mentally enough to deal with the insanity that you see. Another quote from the article. The 1999 Columbine school shooting was the first in the digital age. Such events had been almost unheard of before then. Since then, they have become a horrible part of daily life. However, even the FBI acknowledges that these are internet-fueled copycat events, classic examples of a social contagion spread and spawned on social media and hate-filled chat rooms that incite the unstable. Think about that. A shooting happens and they keep wanting to blame the gun. Nobody ever wants to talk about the clinical picture of the individuals that are shooting these guns. No one ever wants to discuss the social contagion factor. No one ever wants to discuss the fact that they are quite literally doing this for attention. So no, they're not crying. They're not cutting themselves. They've gone so extreme for attention that they're willing to kill people so that their names are known. Social media is never ever blamed or discussed when we talk about these things, though, because you know what? They're too big and they're too powerful. Big tech is too powerful for them to ever get into trouble. So it becomes incumbent upon us to continue to have these discussions. Here's another quote from the article that's impactful. Like BPD, gender dysphoria is a real psychological phenomenon that people genuinely struggle with. However, what we're seeing now is something different. We're seeing social media shaping people in ways that seem to mimic some of these disorders, yet are not the genuine disorders. Several colleagues and I have begun to call them cases of pseudo-BPD, pseudo-DID, or pseudo-gender dysphoria. These are cases where the presenting symptoms dissipate when the person is removed from social media for several weeks, thereby proving that the behaviors presented are not the genuine disorder. Boom. Boom. There's just no way. You look around, I keep saying, there's just no way there are this many kids that are struggling with identity. I didn't graduate with a single trans child, a trans, you know, adult, a transgender, none in my classes ever. Suddenly, you fast forward a few years. I graduated high school in 2007. You fast forward a few years, and now every one in four, whatever it is has some sort of an identity thing. No, they are learning this behavior. They're either learning it from adults that are obsessed on social media, which is why so many of these moms and teachers are on TikTok talking about identity. I'm a TikTok teacher. I'm a TikTok teacher, and I want to make sure my students know this. They are presenting a psychological disorder. And they are impressing that upon their own children, whether that is in the classroom, their students, or whether that is at home, on their own children, because it is a way and a manner for them to get attention. What we are talking about is people that are empty on the inside. Their phone becomes their entire life. Their social media pages becomes their entire life. Their entire days in the real world revolve around the artificial world. It revolves around this avatar that they have created, and they will lean into that avatar as much as possible for one like. And that's all I have to say about that. All right, guys, the next portion of the show is going to be available exclusively on Daily Wire Plus. I'm going to be talking about Johnny Depp's new relationship and Stacey Abrams' recent commentary on abortion. So if you're not a member yet, go ahead and click the link in the description and subscribe right now.